Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies. I talk about those best practices that worked for me, but also those big epic fails that I've made along the way on my own journey toward empowering my students with voice and choice. I interview experts, which is what today is going to be all about, and all because I genuinely believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And before we get started, I'm going to tell you about my newest book. It just dropped on July 3rd. It is New Teacher Mindset, and it's really, it's aimed, yes, toward new teachers, but it's also toward anyone who is wanting a fresh start, wanting to try some student-centered strategies, wanting to innovate, wanting to be different from day one. And so if you're a veteran teacher, if you're a teacher trainer, if you have a student teacher, then maybe this book would be something that you would want to go pick up. So you can find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and a lot of the different bookstores that are out there. So check it out. I would love for you to look into it. I co-wrote it with my friend who's a teacher and expert, Trevor Muir. And I'm really excited about this book. Again, it's called New Teacher Mindset. You can just go to Amazon if you want. Type in the word New Teacher Mindset. You'll see it right there. So today, I am really excited about my guest. It's Carl Azus, and you may already recognize his name. He's a veteran of presenting news to students. He's the host and executive producer of The World from A to Z, a nonpartisan news show that streams daily at worldA2Z.org. And at youtube.com at the world A to Z. The fast-paced program covers current and historic events from across the globe, and it is punctuated by Carl's signature wordplay and personable delivery. I am a huge fan of Carl's work, and that's because back when I taught middle school, between teaching social studies, language arts, journalism, I would use the work that he was doing through CNN Student News and then CNN 10. For 15 years, he was the anchor of that show, and he's worked as a media literacy ambassador for the Poynter Institute and a reporter for Sunlight Homeschool Curriculum. When he's not writing and producing news and puns, Carl can be found in the gym, at church, on the mountain bike trail, or watching classical Hollywood cinema. So without further ado, here is the interview. All right, we have with us here Carl Azus.
I'm excited to be here. It's always fun to talk about something you love doing. And So I appreciate you taking the time and blocking off some time for me today.
Yeah, so I would love to start with kind of your own story. How did you get into journalism? How did you get into the space that you're in right now? And then we'll kind of move into some of the big ideas.
I started in journalism 2 days after I graduated college at the University of Georgia. My background was in video and film production. So like so many other students at that time, I was like, I'm going to Hollywood and I'm going to make movies as a producer. And I mean, that's, you know, it's helpful to have a last name like Coppola if you want to do that. I mean, because it's very difficult and challenging to break into, but that industry has since expanded, and I'd studied, you know, writing and shooting and all kinds of different elements of broadcasting. And at the time I was getting ready to graduate, I was thinking two different, very vastly different paths. One, possibly going to graduate film school, or two, joining the Navy. And at that time, the CNN came recruiting on the campus of the University of Georgia. Of course, I'd been familiar with the brand. I'd been, you know, I remember watching CNN back in eighth grade with my mom at home, and you know, kind of my introduction to cable news. And so, this opportunity came and I went for it. It was a very entry level position. I didn't do very well on the news quiz they gave me. I think I got like a 50. So thankfully that didn't like prevent me from getting into the network. But they hired me at the very entry level, and they like the fact that I could write, that I could shoot, that I could edit, that I knew a little bit about everything. And I learned throughout my career that having a broad skill set in media, it can translate to job security, because maybe the job you want isn't available, but something on the periphery is, and you can work into doing what you eventually want to do. So they recruited me. My start date was 2 days after graduation. And I spent my career there up into the fall of 2022. I had probably 8 different jobs at CNN, moving my way up through the ranks and knowing I wanted to do something editorial, writing, producing. I had an anchor once say to me, "Have you ever thought about being in front of the camera?" And that wasn't something that was a priority when I started, but it planted the seed. And I got to this place where, especially when I started writing news full time and I started working on CNN student news, I was thinking, I don't just want to be the dude to write news for other people to read. I want to be the guy to tell this audience what's going on in the world. And so after several years of really trying to be available anytime I could, making it very clear what I wanted to do, I got the opportunity. I was on the air with CNN Student News and then CNN 10 for about 15 years. The company and I parted ways in the fall of 2022. I freelanced for a while for Sunlight Homeschool Curriculum, for the Poynter Institute as a media literacy ambassador. And then we launched The World from A to Z in the fall, in August of 2023. That's my new show. That's what I'm incredibly excited to talk to you about today. And that brings us up to this moment.
So one of the things that I'm interested in hearing you share all of that, with your background in film, what were you in college? Were you doing acting? Were you doing any kind of, like, what was that background?
That's a fascinating question. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that before. I did do some acting in high school. One of the things that, you know, we had a choice. We had to take either speech or drama. And I was like, well, I didn't really know much about the difference. I knew it was a core curriculum thing and I had to make a choice. I was like, oh, I'll take drama. You know, maybe I'll do a play. And then I had a drama teacher who started casting me in some bigger roles. I did this Shakespeare play no one's ever heard of called As You Like It. But it was great fun. And that really, of course, I didn't see it then, but that really kind of laid the groundwork for public speaking. It helped me, first of all, come out of my shell and to get comfortable with myself and being myself, not trying to always be like, you know, one of my goofy friends. That also helped me get comfortable in front of an audience and to speak clearly and enunciate and project and all of those things, skills that crazily enough would come back many years later. But in college, my focus wasn't so much on being in front of the camera, it was more learning production. And so I had the performance art stuff in high school, and then I had the production stuff in college. And then as I got into CNN, I saw over the years those two things come together.
Absolutely. That's fascinating. So we'll get into, you know, the world from A to Z in a moment. I just want to say ahead of time, kind of in looking into this, watched a bunch of the videos, checked out the questions, looked at it. And I will say I love how well produced it is, how thoughtful it is. One of the things that I wondered about, kind of just thinking about the context that I taught in. So I've been at the university level for now 9 years, and just the media landscape has changed so much. The social landscape has moved so much. I think about, when I was in college as a poli-sci classes that I took, you know, we learned about the Overton window, and it feels like with filter bubbles and with, echo chambers, you have this extreme polarization that's happened since then. And so one of the things I was really struck by was how thoughtful and nuanced and non-biased. And I realize that you can never completely avoid bias. I get that. But how non-biased it felt watching these videos. And I thought, wow, as a classroom teacher entering the landmine that is current events, you've done a really great job in obviously working with your entire team. I'm not saying just you in particular, but, you know, in crafting this
you've done a really great job at making it not getting sucked into the polarization, I guess.
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you so much for that compliment, because that is music to my ears. One of, you know, really what's paramount for us is to be strictly nonpartisan. We wanted to produce a show that is appropriate for public schools nationwide. And we know that teachers like you folks, they have ultimately, they're putting media in front of students. They have to answer to parents. They have to answer to administrators. And we wanted to produce something that's very much a just the facts approach that is very nonpartisan. We are independent media. So there's nobody telling us we're going to major on this story today and we really want you to push this perspective. Nobody does that with us. And so it's so important to us, respecting the fact that we're in public schools, respecting the fact that teachers are the gatekeepers that are going to show this program to students. We want to make sure that if they are challenged by a parent or administrator, why are you showing this? What is the value here? They can point to a number of things, not only that bring educational value, like our international events, our culture, our history segments, but also that is strictly unbiased. And obviously, like, I'm not perfect. I'm not going to say I am the only unbiased voice in news. That's not something that I would even have confidence in, but that's certainly my goal. I want to be able to say, these are the facts. This is what's happening. And then to bring multiple perspectives on that. We want to foster classroom discussion and critical thinking. The only way we can build the trust of a big and diverse audience, we're on the air in all 50 states and on several continents just in our first year of broadcasting. And the only way we can build trust in those communities is by remaining as objective as we possibly can. I don't mind sharing you the opinions of people on the left and on the right when it comes to a political controversy, but I don't want to always share them in the same order. I don't want to share them in a way that favors one side, and I don't want to share them in a way that judges a side.
It's interesting to hear, you know, your goal is to foster that critical thinking, to generate those deeper discussions. And it feels like some of that begins, obviously, with the way you craft a story, the way you craft the media itself. But there's this other affective side that I feel like makes a big difference, which is the tone is not fearful. And so much of what kids see when they turn on regular news, when parents are watching news at home, and I don't care what network, I'm not trying to point out any one particular network, but there is, in the media industry, fear sells. And you see it on social media, you see it across the board. And there's something refreshing about watching one of your videos and the tone is not fearful. And so I'm curious, what went into the thought about what the tone and the affective, emotional aspect would be for what you're crafting?
That's an excellent question too. And I think some of that I learned by doing this for our audience. When I was on CNN 10, most of the time I was on that show and CNN Student News, I wrote that show as well as anchored it. And now with the new show, The World from A to Z, I'm the writer as well as the host. And so, you know, what I learned from the audience, obviously we want to be objective. We don't want to shy away from major topics, even if it's something tragic, something related to the war in the Middle East, the war in Ukraine. We want to cover these big topics and we want to give people the facts about them. We don't want to shy away or have to worry about sensitivities. Certainly, we want to respect the topic and respect the audience. So we take steps for that. But as far as, you know, presenting these different elements, one thing I learned from covering COVID, for instance, was teachers would tell us, you know, it's not as doomsday on your program. And that's something I learned from them, that folks want, if there's a silver lining, to cover that as well, to say, look, this doesn't, you know, the news isn't all gloom and doom. There are always people working on solutions. Some are more effective than others. But that's something I learned from them that they liked about our coverage. And it's honest. It's not made up stuff like, well, we know we're going to get past this. It's like, what's being done to get past this? What's being done to address these issues? And so that's something I learned from the audience. And I try to incorporate in terms of, I'm not trying to scare students. I'm not trying to say whatever the controversy is, this is doomsday and you need to go out and do this and take action and all that. I'm not trying to influence. I'm trying to inform. And if I can inform them about steps being taken to solve an issue, or even to tell them what scientists don't know or what journalists don't know. Saying what you don't know is not a position of weakness. It's a position of strength. It's okay to say, you know, this new virus is spreading. Doctors don't know what's causing it, but research is going on around the world to find a solution. This is their best guess on how to deal with it right now. This is why you shouldn't be worried. This is where you should be cautious. To integrate all of those elements into a news report, I think helps people A, understand it, but B, no, I'm not trying to influence them or trying to scare them or whatever. I'm trying to give them an objective overview of the problem and potential solutions. And I think that there's a lot of reassurance in hearing that. And even some students have told us, wow, it's refreshing to hear somebody who says he doesn't know the answers. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I mean, be truthful, be straightforward. But if there, you know, you can bring in an element too that reassures students, this is something that's happened before. This is something that's being addressed. This is something where there might be a light at the end of the tunnel. I'll want to incorporate that as well. And I think that does help kind of calm the anxieties they might get from watching other news programs.
It's interesting, you know, as you describe that, I remember, and obviously, you know, what you're working on is different now, but as you think about someone who was writing and also producing, you know, creating it, being on it. One of the things that I was struck by way back in the when it was, you know, CNN Student News and you were there, I was struck by how intentional things felt in terms of student engagement. You know, we live in this attention economy where it's very hard to keep students' attention, and yet you also want to go in depth. You have a limited amount of time. And so I was really struck by the engagement strategies that are used, whether it's a quiz, whether it's tying in, you know, some dad jokes and humor that kids are going to get, whether it's, you know, getting them with a hook and then pulling in the historical background. I mean, those elements were so well crafted. And I'm curious, was that all just trial and error for you too? Or did you think about, you know, what students need in terms of of student engagement? Like where did you craft or hone that skill?
You know, I don't know that there was one simple light bulb moment. I mean, that came from, you know, what, 16 years, 17 years now being on air with a student audience. I will say both my parents were public school teachers at one point. And so when I started working at CNN and then on CNN Student News, I would make frequent trips to my mom's classroom to tell them about the show and to kind of, you know, what engages you? Find out from them. What are you interested in? What do you want to see? What, you know, puts that light bulb on over your head? And maybe, you know, starting to incorporate some of that. But my approach to news on the world from A to Z, I think I start with what do you need to know to understand this story if you don't watch the news every day? When you have an audience of students, and some of these people are lifelong learners, we have adults and homeschoolers and all these folks watching our show. And my first, you know, priority is if you're not watching the news every single day, I know I didn't when I was a student. I told you got a 50 on the news quiz to get into CNN. I mean, it wasn't a half-hearted effort, but it was definitely half of 100 as a result. So, I mean, like, I was like, what do you need to understand? If we're covering the story, let's give a little bit of historical background. What's going on? What's been going on in Ukraine? When did that start? The Middle East or, you know, Putin relations with the U.S., whatever these different topics are. To help people understand, look, this brings us up to date, and then to present it in a way that, you know, I'm kind of an energetic dude. And one thing that I found that the audience responded to was that energy and that authenticity. I'm not trying to be something I'm not. I walk around the house making puns. My wife is like, oh, my gosh, this has to stop. And I'm like, you married into this, darling. Get used to it. I'm pun stoppable. But I mean, like, that helped engage our audience, I think, because they could tell I'm not trying to be something I'm not. I'm not trying to be cool. Never was cool. I'm not trying to, you know, affect a professional reporter persona. I'm trying to be myself. How would, you know, one great piece of advice I had along the way was, how would Carl tell folks what's going on? Obviously, I don't want to, you know, sort of inject personal biases or anything like that, but I do want to bring my own sense of, look, this is something important. This is happening in the world. Maybe you don't know the background. Maybe this isn't something you necessarily feel is important, but I want to tell you why other people feel it is. I want to tell you why this is making international news. And then when it's appropriate to bring in my personality, to bring in the dad jokes, the puns, plays on words, sometimes the errant rap, whatever I can do to A, have fun with it myself, but B, help engage that audience to where they're like, okay, well, you know, we know this guy. And even students who don't like puns are like, yeah, but when you take them out at the end of a show, it just doesn't feel the same. And yeah. So like, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm being true to myself. And I think that that authenticity and energy has helped engage the audience, and seeing me day after day in the classroom. It always amazes me, folks coming up to me from all ages, some who are watching in class now and some who were in their 20s and watched me back on CNN Student News. And they're always just like, you know, we love that show. And can you make a pun? And can you give a shout out? Can you say Fridays are awesome? I'm like, all of these little elements I think have helped, you know, not just inform them, but maybe entertain them a bit too. And I'm really grateful for that.
You know, it's interesting as you talk about this, you know, one of the things that you have such a broad age range, and then at the same time, you know, you need to make it accessible and approachable to students of all ages. I mean, that's a reality. But at the same time, you do a really great job about not talking down to kids,
yes,
which I think is really important. And I'm curious if you could talk to that for a bit, and for teachers as well. What does it mean to make current events and news events approachable without taking a tone of talking down to somebody?
You know, that's something that someone once asked me, do you assume your audience has a fifth grade level of news knowledge, an eighth grade level of news knowledge, an 11th grade level? I've always, you know, had this approach. What do you need to know to understand what's going on? If you don't watch the news, how can I bring you up to speed on what's happening and why it's important, and hopefully engage students in it? That approach, I think, has helped a great deal. I'm not assuming they have a certain level of knowledge, but to avoid talking down, I don't think of myself as somebody who is, you know, someone who's in the position of news expertise talking about people who need to understand like me. That's not at all my approach. My approach is more like, how can I explain this clearly and usefully? And I'll admit, we don't go into the depth of 60 minutes. I mean, if you're really in tune with some of the longer format news magazines and longer documentary format reports, you're not going to get that depth of information in a 9 to 10 minute show. And I recognize that, but I do want to make it so that, you know, it's something that's informative, something that's engaging. And I'm always looking to cover a topic that somebody doesn't know about. So for instance, there was one story we had about, I believe it was in the nation of Nigeria, a fashion designer who brought a live runway show to a slum. Mm-hmm. And what I loved about that story is, you know, first of all, I mean, like you have elements of this is a country, we could talk about poverty rates, we could talk about the struggles of people in a slum, but then suddenly you're getting culture, you're getting African fashion design elements, you're getting a designer's perspective on why it's important to give back to his community, and is this having an impact on his community? I love that because even if you're somebody who's super politically savvy or, you know, a news hound and really, really focused on everything going on, I love the idea that every day in the world from A to Z, whether it's a trivia question or a slice of life cultural report like I just described, something you didn't know about that you're learning from. Mm-hmm. And that's something, first of all, I learn every single day doing the show. People think like I know a lot of this stuff going in. I don't know anything. I sit down, I'm like, what's happening in the world? What can I learn about it so I can explain it to this audience? And the more I can incorporate those different stories, those different trivia questions, I want them to be challenging. I don't want you to necessarily know the answer. I'd rather you learn from the trivia question than be able to get it right the first time. So no matter who you are or where you're watching from, there's something you didn't know before that you did learn by watching the show. That's what happens with me in producing it. That's what I want people to have from watching it.
You know, it's interesting. one of the things that is embedded within it is critical thinking, right? That's a huge part of what you see. And sometimes it's subtle, you know, there was one of your recent videos where there's the question about executive orders. And instead of just an answer, which is, would be like, oh, well, that's a trivia question. It feels like it goes from trivia question to critical thinking when you say, this person not only had, you know, Roosevelt not only had, spoiler alert, it was Roosevelt, not only had the highest number of executive orders, but also the highest average, so that it's not merely, oh, he served the highest amount of time.
Yes. Well, yes.
I feel like that's in a small amount of time, that's a critical thinking element. And in a culture that is largely, I would argue America is largely statistically illiterate. We don't have great statistical literacy in our country. I mean, you see this with adults. You see it with ridiculousness about people get obsessed over a 0.5 difference in poll numbers with presidents. Yeah. And they're not even looking at standard deviation. There's basic things like that where you're like, it's a dead heat. It's a dead heat right now. And so as you think about it, like I feel like critical thinking is embedded throughout the construction of what you're doing. And what I'm wondering is, what are some strategies that you think teachers can be using post watching a video? So like they take it, it's great, there's some critical thinking. Where would you like teachers to go with this in terms of inspiring critical thinking in their students?
Absolutely. I mean, like when it comes to bringing these controversies in, and so many things now are controversial that didn't used to be. I mean, like there are some topics, I don't mean like just, you know, historically controversial issues like the death penalty or abortion or something like that. But there are so many things now, whether it's a new law or a new proposal, and suddenly it becomes controversial because so many journalists are writing about it through blue or red tinted glasses. Mm-hmm. And they're not just speaking objectively about it. My hope would be that after hearing the facts of a show, you're hearing multiple perspectives on the world from A to Z, mm-hmm. ones that are presented evenly, that I'm not taking a side, or that hopefully you can't tell whichever one I might agree with, because it's not about me. It's about informing people and giving them discussion tools. Mm-hmm. I would love for teachers to be able to take that show, to take those different perspectives, and to be able to expand on that with their students. And we've heard from many who do, where they're like, you know, well, most of the class felt this way, but there was a student, there were a couple people who had this viewpoint. And, you know, because in presenting these different perspectives, I'm not judging them. I would hope that conversation in a classroom could be had without different students' perspectives being judged. If you have a class of 25 kids and 23 of them feel one way and one feels the other way and one's just silent, I would like the kid who feels the other way at least to be able to discuss and outline his or her points, and maybe the other students to say, you know what, okay, maybe you haven't swayed us, maybe I don't agree with you, but I understand where you're coming from. I think mm-hmm. that historically in America, there was a lot more of that. There was a lot more of it in Congress. There was a lot more in the, you know, people were electing and the things they have to say and talking points. And I think that we've gotten away from that. I mean, earlier you mentioned echo chambers, and you mentioned like how, you know, folks are now so biased. You have to take a side on everything, and you only have to have that side's perspective and talking points without critical thinking, without examining the other side. That's something that I would hope to kind of break down a little bit by presenting these multiple perspectives in a way that doesn't judge them, so that whether, you know, all students agree on something, or whether you have, as is more likely, more nuanced views, they can discuss it without being at each other's throats about it. Mm-hmm. And I would hope that, you know, that's something that maybe in a small way they could carry on later in a bigger way, that, you know, fosters conversation, fosters community in mm-hmm. a country that's becoming more and more fractured.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You just think about the difference in audience and media consumption in general. So yes, obviously relevance, everything's sorted by relevance. And because of that, you have this reality within echo chambers of everything in it. It's your social media, it's your TikTok feed with kids, I'm thinking about, right? It's TikTok, yes, or it's Instagram, but it's really interesting to think, you know, the classroom is one of the last spaces where it's not defined by the algorithm, right? It's defined by physical geography and curriculum and space and social interaction. And so it feels like it's just such a huge opportunity to model respectful discourse. And so, you know, I'm curious for a teacher who looks at this and says, look, I have students from all over the place in terms of what they believe. You know, we have some kids with wild conspiracy theories. We have ones who have the cultural rhetoric is really amped up. You know, what are some strategies you think teachers can use as students engage in these discussions to sort of dial down the rhetoric a little bit and model that respectful discourse?
I mean, that is a tremendous challenge and also a goal of our show. Mm-hmm. A blessing of being independent media is that we are able to tackle these controversies first in a way that distills just the facts about them. Is there a new law being proposed? What is it? Why is it being proposed? And then once you really boil down the facts of it, to then get into, okay, these are the major schools of thought. This is why the person who proposed the law loves it. This is why a critic hates it. Not going to take one of those sides or try to stack, you know, oh, well, this has many more pros than cons. I'm not trying to do any of that. I'm trying to just say, look, these are some of the reasons why people might like this. These are some of the reasons why people might not like it. Hopefully, a teacher would be able to take those facts and take those disparate opinions and then say, okay, what can we get from this? What are your different thoughts on this? I mean, I think that dialogue that is increasingly missing is so important to improving the situation we see. I mean, like, you know, you look at other countries in the news, you look at misinformation and disinformation and, you know, different actors from around the world trying to influence Americans through social media. And a lot of that deepens the divide. I mean, people think they're yelling at someone from the opposite side of the aisle. But I think, you know, the more divided and unable Americans become to have these civil discussions, the better it is for other countries in the world, because eventually we'll be inept. We can't do anything. We're too busy screaming at each other. And then, you know, you have other actors on the world stage doing whatever they want. Because, you know, I think that the strength of a country is eroded when its people can't agree on anything. And I think, you know, a step toward agreeing and compromising is being able to have those civil discussions. So I'd like to think of a very, very small part. I mean, it's a 9-minute show. I'm not going to act like I'm some, you know, great solution with Coral Azus. It's not like that. But I would hope that they would be able to have a discussion, as I said earlier, without being at each other's throats. But to be able to talk about factual information in a way that shows respect to the other side, and they don't have to agree with it or have their opinion changed, but at least they understand it. And, you know, you mentioned social media, and that's something when discussing media literacy, it's such a cautionary tale, because when it comes to TikTok, I mean, everybody now has a broadcast quality camera inner pocket. You can go on camera and say whatever you want. Anyone on social media, whether it's Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, whatever, can say anything at any time about any topic. It doesn't make that person an expert. That doesn't mean they're giving you a comprehensive view. And yet what's fascinating to me is somebody who might be, you know, spouting off pure opinion or purely one-sided information will have an incredible influence through hundreds of thousands, if not millions of followers who are all like, yes, I agree with this. This is the way I'm going to go with it. And I'm like, that's missing dialogue. That might be missing context. It might be missing journalism. This might be just somebody's opinion. Some folks on social media are very well informed and have very valuable insight. Some folks are just making stuff up based on their feelings for that moment. And they feel differently the next day, but they've gone on to the next topic. And yet it's having these influential ripple effects across the country. So I'm always trying to tell folks, look, when it comes to consuming media and it comes to getting these stories about what you want to have thoughtful discussions, don't use just one source, especially if that source is social media. But even in the major media organizations, look for how different networks are covering a topic because different networks might major on different spheres of interest within that topic. Look at how they're covering it. Get some viewpoints on this or even just articles on this from left-wing media and right-wing media and find the truth, find the overlap, and find the different perspectives they bring to it. All of that can foster understanding, and all of it can hopefully encourage people to say, look, I want to have credible sources of information. I want to have factual sources of information, and I want to have sources of information that allow me to think and consider different perspectives and make up my own mind.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. You know, my last question would be, as we think about teachers have a busy schedule, time is limited, and on top of that, current events, news can feel really contentious, and it's tempting for teachers to shy away from it and just say, yeah, we're not gonna touch it. What would be the case that you would make for incorporating the news and current events? You know, why is it long-term important that students interact with this information, given the fact that, again, the schedule can be tight, right?
Yes, it absolutely can. I sympathize with teachers there. And, you know, in launching the new show, we'd considered everything from, do we go 5 minutes? Do we go 15 minutes? Obviously, I heard from CNN Student News and CNN 10 that many teachers had told me that 10 minutes was sort of a sweet spot. And so the new show, you know, officially being 9, usually drifts to 10 because old habits die hard. Yeah. But, you know, that's something that I do respect their time. I do want it to be a quick overview of a variety of topics. There might be times when a teacher uses part of a show or they use, you know, a major event that's happening and maybe come back to the other parts later on. But, you know, first of all, I want the show to be contained. I want it to be something that, you know, you can learn from that does explain the major topics of the day in a 9 to 10 minute time slot. But I also, you know, when it comes to incorporating news and events, you know, people always say, if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it and that sort of thing. And in a time when so many people are getting fragmented news slices from social media, oftentimes, or sometimes even influencers, mm-hmm. I want to be able to provide an objective, independent source people can go to get credible information and to get different viewpoints on it that aren't judged. And that's something that's such a priority for us every day in the world from A to Z. And to parents who are concerned, teachers who are concerned, I would just say, please take a few minutes out of your day and watch it. We put everything we've done online at our website, worldaToZ.org. Mm-hmm. And so folks can go there and they click on past episodes. Everything is right out there in the open, and they can see little descriptions of each topic. So if they're concerned about what our approach would be like to a political controversy, you know, we recently covered the trial against former President Donald Trump. And so we encourage people, go there, watch this, get a sense of our approach and what that's going to be and how we try to prioritize objectivity without taking a side. I would hope that folks who took the time would see that and then come back and say, you know what, we're okay with this, we like this. This gives teachers some cover to show parents, look, this is what we're doing. You can see everything they've done here, not just what they're doing this year, not just what they're doing for this election cycle. This is the background. This is the foundation. We've been on the air a year now, so we have quite a library that people can comb through, get a good sense of our show and our voice, but also our objectivity. And in the past, I can tell you that folks who've done that, whether they had concerns about an independent show, what is the World from A to Z? That's not affiliated like you were before with a major network like CNN. It's not an NBC product or Smithsonian, National Geographic, whatever. We're like, you know, well, first of all, it's there and we can say we're objective all day long, but we hopefully bear that out in each show. But go there and take a few minutes and watch it and come back. And I am happy to say those people who do have come back and said, can I get a shout out? Which means they're watching and they want to show it to their students.
But so great.
It shows that, you know, they do have, I mean, trust is something that has to be earned. And I'm thankful for this first year we've just wrapped up. And I would hope that that gives people some, you know, if they need it, cover to use the show, but a foundation on which we can build and continue to build out those priorities of objectivity and appropriateness for public schools and middle and high school classrooms that teachers can confidently use and parents can confidently trust.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, and it really is great. I will say I kind of went down the rabbit trail of the world from A to Z ahead of time, and I just was very impressed with how well crafted it was. And from a pedagogical standpoint, from you know, me being a history nerd, to being into current events, like it was very well done. So really appreciate it.
I could tell by your questions that you were familiar with the show. You were familiar with my previous work. No, I mean, it was just very insightful questions. And you're coming at it from the position of an educator who's been at multiple levels in terms of instruction and age level and everything. And so I appreciate that. I appreciate the thoughtful questions you had, because it made for a, you know, just, I thought, much better interview. And so I thank you for that. That was great stuff. It is, you know, it's my pleasure to be here with you today, and I thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, so there we have it. That was Carl Azus talking about media literacy, information literacy, journalism. I really enjoyed that interview, and I hope you got as much out of it as I did, because it was a wealth of wisdom to me. If you enjoy this podcast, would you do me a favor? Would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Amazon, wherever it is that you are accessing this podcast? And just go ahead and click the subscribe button. That's going to be really helpful as well. And maybe tell a friend about it. So again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.